It's now my pleasure then at this time to call on our brother Mark Snowblin to give us the words of exhortation.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm happy to be meeting with you all this morning around the table of the Lord. In our readings from this past week, we've had the privilege of reading from the Gospel of John. And as one begins to read from John's Gospel, we're immediately reminded that his Gospel is unique. John, I think, adds a depth and an insight to the life and ministry of Jesus that the other three Gospels don't quite match. And you see this immediately when you start reading the Gospel in the first chapter. In those first few verses, there's an allusion made that reminds us of creation. John says, "In the beginning was the Word." And he also mentions a light that's shining in the darkness. And well, going back to the beginning, you know, from the second verse of Genesis, that the earth was without form and void. It was dark. And then God spoke. And he said, "Let there be light." The first recorded words, "Let there be light." And there was light. And then it says, God saw that the light was good, and he even divided the light from darkness. A distinction was made between light and darkness. Light was good. And it was necessary. Without light, life wouldn't be possible. We understand this. There's more in John. There's more that he records in chapter one, something different, something new. He says the Word became flesh. He said the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and also that the light was in the world. And this wasn't the greater light that ruled the day that we see in Genesis. The Word and the light, of course, represented a real person, flesh and blood. And then John says that this person was the light of men, the true light that gives light to every man. He was in the world. That light was in the world. But John also says that the world did not know him. It's an unfortunate truth, isn't it? It's been true throughout the ages. Even when there was darkness in the world, there was darkness in the world, even when the light was in the world. And this actually becomes a theme of John throughout his gospel. And that's what I'd like to consider this morning. So let's turn to John chapter 9, which we just read together. One of the things I think that makes John's gospel unique is that he doesn't record as many miracles of Jesus that the other gospels do. But I think when he does, he gives them significance and depth. And portrays a greater spiritual lesson in his gospel. And this is certainly true of the miracle recorded here. So let's read again from John chapter 9 in the first two verses. As Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Now it's difficult to imagine how hard this man's life would have been. being blind is a challenge today, even with the social structure and supports that we have in place. Then those resources and supports were minimal or not there. So the result, it's suggested later in the chapter that he spent his time sitting and begging. And this is likely the state that Jesus and the disciples found him in. He was blind and he begged. But he also suffered from another unfair condition. He was stigmatized. As we see through this chapter, as we read through the chapter, we see that he is considered by others to be a sinner. And that's because at this time, their explanation for sickness and suffering was that the person was paying the price for their sins. Not just in general, but specifically in individual cases. That's what the disciples understood. And that's why they asked this question of Jesus. Why is he blind? Is it because of his sins? His parents' sin? I think we can imagine the debate that was going on at that time and at this time specifically. If he sinned, well, the argument is, well, if you're born blind, how could you be paying the price for your sins? You didn't sin before you were born, so it couldn't be your fault. Or did God retroactively know that this man was going to sin, so he made him pay the price anyway? Or maybe he was paying the price for his parents' sin, the sins of the father visiting the child. But if someone suffers because of their sin, does that mean that someone who's healthy and has no struggles is sinless? Does that make them a better person? I think we can see the debate they would have had. But the debate was wrong and pointless, wasn't it? You know, if the blind man was listening, he probably would have thought, you know, here we go again. I haven't heard this before. Maybe they'll at least give me some money. But then Jesus spoke. And that changed everything. Jesus didn't blame him, did he? He gave him hope. Verse 3. Neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus. This happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Jesus was the light that John identified in chapter 1. What did it mean for this man? How was the work of God going to be displayed in his life? Well, John tells us in chapter 20, verse 31, and he actually hints at it in chapter 10, too, that he recorded certain miracles that we might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, we might have life in his name. The idea was that the people would believe, that the people would see the light and recognize Jesus for who he was. People were waiting for the Messiah, weren't they? And many of the messianic prophecies prophesied, particularly, I think, in Isaiah, that the people should have understood. These prophecies spoke of a light, someone who was going to open the eyes of the blind and release captives from the prison of darkness. Well, these prophecies were being fulfilled. But were the people going to see Jesus for who he really was? Because this was about something far greater than one man receiving his sight. As amazing as it would have been for this man, who faithfully did as Jesus asked, who made his way to the pool of Siloam, which apparently wasn't a short distance, made that walk with the mud on his eyes. I'm sure the temptation to rub it off would have been there, or maybe there was people along the way that knew him and mocked him. You know, the irony of this blind man with mud covering his eyes. but he was rewarded. The result of this faithful act, he was able to see for the first time. And that was the one thing that he understood. Verse 25, he says, one thing I do know. I was blind, but now I see. And as amazing as this miracle would have been for this man, there is something far greater suggested here, isn't there? Jesus wasn't just there so that this man could see. He was there so that the whole world could see. He was the light of the world, and that light was shining. As we see in this chapter, there was still darkness all around. Jesus performed this miracle so that others might believe and realize who he was. The miracle was lost on everyone else in this chapter, wasn't it? His neighbors are mentioned first. Verse 8, his neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, "Isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg?" Others claimed that he was. Others said, "No, he only looks like him." But he himself insisted, "I am the man." They couldn't even agree that it was him. The people that likely knew him best, they had to at least agree on that, on who he was, before they could appreciate what happened. They couldn't see it. But he insisted, "I am the man." So they brought him to the Pharisees. And they argued right in front of him too, didn't they? Look at verse 13. They brought him to the Pharisees, the man who had been blind. Now the day on which Jesus made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Therefore the Pharisees who asked him how he had received his sight. "You put mud on my eyes," the man replied, "and I washed, and now I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." But others asked, "How can a sinner do such miraculous signs?" So they were divided. The Pharisees likely didn't know the man, didn't know if he had been blind. The stumbling block for them was something else. They couldn't see past the mud that Jesus made. In their eyes, making mud was unlawful on the Sabbath, much like it's like making clay bricks, I suppose. So the question at first for them wasn't about the man's identity. The question was, and it's implied in verse 16, was about Jesus. The question is, was this man from God? They were divided. Some of them said, "Well, he's a sinner. He doesn't keep the Sabbath. He can't be from God." Others said, "Yeah, but apparently this man was blind. And now he can see." They couldn't agree or understand. And then they asked the man what he actually thought of Jesus. They were the ones who were supposed to have the answers. Was it too hard for them to admit that this is what had been prophesied? They knew the prophecy. The blind receiving their sight, was this the Messiah? They asked the man in verse 17, "What do you have to say about him?" And the man replied, "He's a prophet." At first, the man told his neighbors that a man named Jesus had healed him. Now he calls him a prophet. But unfortunately, even as his faith was growing and he was beginning to see the light, there was still darkness all around him. The Jews in the end, it says in verse 18, didn't believe that he'd been blind. They likely hadn't witnessed the miracle. They'd probably never seen the man before. And if they had, they wouldn't have paid attention to him. they would have just dismissed him. If he was blind, he was obviously a sinner. They didn't want to have anything to do with him. They wouldn't want to talk to him. They didn't care about him. They wouldn't have wanted to have anything to do with him. And so as the interrogation continued, the next step was to call in the man's parents. And they were asked, is this your son, the one born blind? It is. How is it that he can see now? But his parents didn't want to admit anything, did they? Apparently they were afraid of the Jews. It says in verse 22 that the Jews had decided that anyone who acknowledged that Jesus was the Christ, the Messiah, would be put out of the synagogue. They may have been indirectly blackmailed into not confessing something that they really believed. All they could say was, verse 20, we know he is our son, and we know he was born blind. But how he can see now, or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him. And so the Pharisees turned their attention back to the man and asked him the same questions again. But added in verse 24, we know this man as a sinner, referring to Jesus, to which he replied in verse 25, whether he is a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I know, I was blind, now I see. Incredible, really, isn't it? He was blind, but now he could see. And he could see in more ways than one, couldn't he? The Pharisees, the Jewish leaders, couldn't see, or at least couldn't admit what they were seeing. They said, we don't even know where he comes from. The man born blind was beginning to see something. The next few verses, we see his faith growing. Verse 30, the man answered, now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly man who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. He could see it. The Pharisees didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to see it. To them, Jesus had to be a sinner. Or maybe they thought that so that they didn't have to consider the truth that was right in front of them. That was the mud on their eyes, wasn't it? And in the end, they used the same false logic on the man. To this, they replied in verse 34, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us? And they threw him out. He had no right to try and teach them, right? He was a sinner. But what this man was saying was true. He could see the light. But once again, he was despised. He was healed, but the stigma remained. His neighbors and his family had let him down. And now the religious leaders wanted to send him a message. So because of his confession, he was thrown out. And was this him being thrown out of the synagogue for suggesting that Jesus was the Christ? For speaking the truth? This man was all alone. No one knew him or cared about him, supported him. But Jesus didn't abandon him. Jesus came to him. Give him hope. Verse 35, Jesus heard that they had thrown him out. And when he found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? Who is he, sir? The man asked. Tell me so that I may believe in him. Jesus said, you have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you. Then the man said, Lord, I believe. His conversion was complete. He could see, and he understood. He believed. Now, this account is an amazing insight into the conversion of one man. But it's intended to be so much more, isn't it? John says he recorded the miracle so that we might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing, we might have life in his name. So really, this is about more than one man, isn't it? And I think if you look at this chapter, we can view it as a parable. I think that's how we can really appreciate it most. A parable with its many players. The man was in this condition so that a lesson could be taught about the restoration of sight. And I think we can identify with the man born blind and his struggles. Even the adversity that he faced after he was healed. It's not an easy path to walk. But he was a man who saw the light, a man who was given hope. And we have that same hope. But I think we also have to consider here that maybe the lesson for us isn't so much about the light. We've seen the light, we all believe. Maybe the message isn't so much about sight. Maybe the lesson is about blindness. If this is a parable, there was one man who could see, but many who only thought they could see. Jesus is the light. That's what John tells us, the way to salvation. We've all seen the light. We're even supposed to reflect the light. But we're not immune to the kind of blindness revealed in this parable. You know, the worst kind of blindness is the kind of blindness that Jesus can't heal. The kind of blindness that thinks it can see and sees no need for the cure. The cure that is so desperately needed and only our physician provides.